Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Satsang with G. If you haven't guessed, I'm G. And and welcome, everybody. I'm so glad you're here. And a special welcome to those who might have hung out after the Sri and Kira show. I think you'll find it different, but equally engaging. And today I you know, oftentimes I don't pick the subject till just a little bit before I start the show. I kind of like the improvisational nature of it. It's I can't help. There's something about, and I highly recommend to everybody, going through life without an agenda. And that's going to be another theme that I pick up in a whole other show. But it's so much fun to just show up somewhere not knowing what's going to happen, not even knowing who you're going to be. You know, no preconceived notion, no presumptions. It's just like fresh. And even let everybody else be that way. You don't have any expectations about anybody else. It's really a great way to be. But the subject I want to talk about this evening is the subject of oneness, because I even had a question in the chat on YouTube before we started, which I'm going to get to, probably because she saw the title. And it's something on everybody's mind. People have talked about having oneness experiences, you know, being one with God, being one with the universe, and all that. And I have as well. And I've actually done a couple of courses. One's called the Oneness Experience. The other's called Stepping into Oneness. I think they're both available. I mean, if you haven't registered for the free non-dual class that I do called The Thought of I, I recommend you do. That's what I think it's called, gpwalsh.com/thoughtofi. Evan, if you could check that out. I think that's correct. You may even put it into the chat for us. So delighted that you're all here. And the oneness thing is we can be here as one. You know, the idea that there's two is just an idea. You know, whenever you gather together, everybody's felt it, you know, that a certain energy, unless there's conflict between people, if everybody's kind of doing the same, they're into the same thing, they have the same kind of energy and motivation for the moment, there is a feeling that is unmistakably present. And that's oneness. That's it. It doesn't have to be heaven's parting and angels singing. It's a very simple thing. I mean, you drive your car, right? You don't think about driving your car, right? Okay, I've got to turn on the blinker, start turning the wheel, hand over hand. You did it first, but eventually you literally became one with the car. So you don't even think about it. I mean, women put on their makeup, driving the car. We all have conversations. We talk on the phone. We're texting, which we shouldn't do. It's like, you know, that's way too distracting. You actually need to be looking at the road. But and if you really pay attention, you notice that as you're driving, you're not just sitting there stiffly, holding on to it, holding on to the wheel. There's these constant little tiny adjustments that are being made completely without your engagement, completely without your involvement, while you're having a conversation with somebody in the back seat or on the phone, using your hands-free device, of course. And that's it. That's oneness. It's when the barrier between you and other simply disappears. And I think if we got to see how many times during the day that happens, that we dismiss because it happens all the time, we don't see any significance in it, I'll bet you dollars to donuts that you would experience bigger and bigger occurrences of that, because you become increasingly attuned to it, until eventually you would see that it in fact is going on all the time, that oneness is the fact. Not just a pretty spiritual idea, not just some really great, beautiful thing that, you know, someday you'll attain in heaven, or if you attain, you know, ultimate enlightenment to become a sage, but it's actually happening all the time. Matter of fact, the only difference between the sage and the ordinary person is that the sage recognizes that it's happening all the time and just has surrendered to it, doesn't feel any need to fight anymore, and is just overwhelmed with delight seeing its signature absolutely everywhere, and everything that happens and every event in your life actually has the handwriting of God on it, if you want to put it that way. So I decided when I was going to do this that rather than talk about it, I would do something I haven't done on the show yet, and this is actually show number 7. I can't believe it. It seems like just yesterday I started it. And that is, I want to do a kind of a brief oneness meditation to actually experience it. Let's experience it firsthand, and the essence of that oneness, which is you, the one who's having the experience. So close your eyes if you can. If you can't, that's fine too. I mean, there's just more available to introspection and looking within when the eyes are closed, simply because we process so much information from our eyes. Like 80% of our information comes from our eyes. So when you close your eyes, it frees up a lot of cycles for focusing somewhere else. And so just go ahead and close them if you can. If not, just keep them open. But try to bring your attention into your body, into what you're actually feeling. And notice that your attention really does go where you ask it to go. Now, it's oftentimes like kind of an unruly dog, and it gets easily distracted. You know, when the squirrel runs, the dog immediately runs after it. Eventually, even the most wild dog, if you like work with them and gently bring them back and reward them or not reward them, and they eventually will, they'll see the squirrel, but they'll sit there anyway. The attention is like that. So just bring it back if it wanders away. And what you're putting your attention on is simply the way your body feels. Nothing abstract, nothing strange, no counting the numbers, just trying to watch your breath. But just let your attention wander around the body, which is what it wants to do, and just feel. And as that's happening, the first thing you'll notice is the body actually responds to the inward attention. It has to, because the energy now, that energy of attention is very powerful. It activates whatever it looks at. So when you look inwardly, that energy starts building up within you. And the outward drain, which is very common, especially in our world, gets curtailed. And that energy starts replenishing itself from within. The next thing to notice is that there's a singular point that is aware of the whole thing. Your thoughts are there. The attention is there. The feeling of your body is there. Emotions are coming and going. Sensations are coming and going. Watch the attention as it moves around the body, sometimes when you ask it to, sometimes when you don't. But that thing that is watching, is that coming and going? That's the question. And in the midst of this incredibly vast, rich experience we have, this constant flow of experience, of information, and sensation, thought and feeling. I mean, it's constant, right? According to scientists, 60 billion bits of information constantly hitting the energy system. Constant flow, constantly changing. And yet this apparently simple thing at the center isn't changing. It's almost like the empty screen upon which everything is being registered. Just pay attention to that for a second. Because that is the oneness of your being. It's singular. There's not two of those. There's two thoughts. There's thousands of thoughts. There's thousands of feelings that pass through. There's thousands of sensation and billions of bits of input. But there's one point of receiving. Now, we don't have to even name that at this point. We don't have to talk. We don't have to say anything about it. Just notice it. That this simple place of one is where everything is being registered, and it's the place you're looking from. It's the place that sees everything. Notice that your thoughts and feelings and sensations don't see you. They're just appearing and disappearing. You see them. That you, that thing, is there more than one of them? Just look for yourself. Don't take my word for it. See if you can find two of them there. Two tenants in that house. Or is there just the one? When you actually look and see or feel, yeah, probably a better word, that which is watching, you find it to be totally singular. If you watch long enough, you find that it has no boundaries. You can't find an edge to it. You can't actually find a form to it. Form and edges appear to it and disappear. It's a remarkable thing, but that thing is you. That's yourself. That is the oneness of being, the singularity. That which experiences everything else. So just notice it. That's it. Don't try to do anything with it. That's the mind trying to process. That's thoughts about it. Just be it. That's all you have to do. So since this is a short show, I'm not going to do that. I've actually done those meditations go on for 30 or 60 minutes, but I'm not going to do that this time. Plenty of meditations available, Master Art, if you want them. So come on back, open your eyes. Just pay attention for a moment as to how that feels. And the energy that communicates to the body and to the entire system, really. And I've got a whole slew of questions here on the chat that I can get to. When I'm looking to the side here, it means I'm looking at the screen that has all of the chats from YouTube and Facebook on it, so I can get to it. So let's see. Let's just kind of start from the beginning. I think I know which ones came in first here. So this one is from Marie. Marie, there's two here from Marie. Cool. She says, let me scroll back up because I kind of lost one there. Was there one in front of it? No. Okay, cool. I know all is one. I feel I'm a fairly balanced person and going through life well. Have been conscious in the last three years, yet there are events that have happened that I can't understand why things are the way they are. If within so without means I've created this, how can I create what I prefer? This is the classic answer, and it's one of the things that the whole idea of the law of attraction and all of that has actually kind of confused. It's brought more confusion than help, because it says as within, so without, and that is true. I mean, if whatever you believe is going to take shape in your life, a strong belief is going to basically filter out every bit of information that contradicts it and amplify every bit of information that doesn't. And this is the way the whole system works. It has to. As I said before, the nervous system receives 60 billion bits of information a second, whereas the cognitive part, the part that's actually deciding stuff, it can handle 60 of those. So filtering's got to happen, right? And one of the key filters is what we believe. The problem is that what we believe, for the most part, wasn't something that we created. It was something that was kind of downloaded, that we inherited. And so the belief that is creating our sense of being isn't really ours. So I would first off put aside that idea that I have created my reality, right? Because I can even feel it when I'm reading that. And most people who say that, because they don't have the reality they want, they feel very, very broken. They feel guilty. Like, what am I doing wrong? The answer is nothing. You're doing absolutely nothing wrong. The experience you're having is being created not by you consciously, but by the you think you are, by all of the unconscious patterns and programs and stuff that are going on. You can't just change your thinking and visualize something and it's all going to change. It takes an enormous amount of willpower to make even a tiny dent in it. And then the moment that willpower weakens, which it inevitably does because it takes so much energy, everything just kind of goes back to the way it was or worse. Right? So the answer lies, to me, which is why I'm so vehement about it when people bring it up, the answer lies in knowing who you are. I mean, people say, okay, here's your desire. Now hold on to your desire. What I say is, whose desire is it? Is this really your desire? Or is the desire itself emanating from this person that you think you are that was programmed into you from the beginning? If you don't know who you are, how can you trust anything you see, believe, or want? You can't. You can't know if you're seeing the world without knowing what's doing the seeing, right? You can't understand what's actually happening unless you understand the eyes through which it's being seen. So I just kind of put that entire thing aside and I say, okay, this is the experience you're having. Now, the first thing I do is say, totally, 100%, with no holds barred, completely and totally accept everything the way it is, with no resistance whatsoever. Huh? Well, that means I'm going to be stuck with it. Who said that? That's the trick that gets put into it, that if I just accept things the way they are, that they're going to stay that way forever. Have you ever had anything ever stay the way forever? If you had anything stay around even as long as you wanted it to, and how many things have you had stick around way longer than you wanted them to? Okay. So step one is, instead of trying to fight your experience to try to get it to conform to your will, completely let go of your desire to try to control it. I call this the yoga of allowing. It is a beautiful inner posture that just says, you know, I haven't got a clue. It just admits its weakness. It doesn't know, but it wants to know. It wants to learn. And then you begin to turn your attention within and start listening for and looking at all the various kinds of energies that are creating the scenario. And eventually, you become more interested and more curious about what's going on inside of you than what's going on outside of you. And what happens is this most marvelous of transformation begins to take place. Because the moment you stop fighting with yourself, inner conflict stops. Because the system's just going to do what it does, right? You can't force it to do something else. It's way smarter than you. It's been around a lot longer. It knows the drill. It knows every detail. It knows all your tricks, right? It's way more clever than you. You can never outsmart it, right? No matter what you do, it's been there before. It just blows it off, right? So there's no point in fighting it. But it's going to do that. It's not going to stop. So if there's going to be an end to conflict and the establishment of inner harmony, you're going to have to stop. You're going to have to drop your argument with reality and your own internal experience. This isn't resignation. This is wisdom. And now you become humble, open, and learnable or teachable. And I don't mean teaching from, you know, some guru or something. I mean teachable from your own inner experience. Because it will tell you what's happening. It'll tell you why it's doing what it's doing. I call this inner reconciliation. As you start to listen to this energy, it begins to unfold its story to you. When you're fighting it, it's just in defensive posture. It's not going to let you anywhere near. It's a guard on duty. But when you're no longer fighting it, and you become safe for it, even respectful of it, even appreciative of the incredible energy that is the human system, it can't help but respond to that and detect this is a safe environment. Ah, it's safe. And what happens in safety? The defenses come down. I don't need to be as defensive. And then what happens? Communication. It starts to open up. And if you're willing to listen, it's definitely willing to talk. And this inner world is just, really, it's just the sense of alienation that we've had with ourselves. It's the sense that we're not one. Because these energies are all you, right? Just the way, you know, blue light and red light, while very different in character, are both light, you know? So the part of you that seems really resistant is a part of you. You can't get rid of it. So you might as well love it. Take it in. Find out why it's resistant, right? And drop your resistance to it so it doesn't have to fight you. I hope that makes sense to you. It's a completely different way of doing it. It's what I teach at the Institute. We call it Masterhood Institute, which we call Inner Reconciliation. So, thought. Oh, okay. It's gpwalsh.com/thought is to get the free. It's a 2-hour workshop. It's not, you know, a tiny little ethical bribe, you know, just a little. It's a super report that's, you know, half a page of a PDF. It's a 2-hour workshop. It's really quite involved. Okay, let's see. What's the next question here? And if that didn't get to it for you, Marie, by all means, please type in the chat there. Let's see. This is from, I love this name, Undead Consparrow. There are separations between different people. Why would it still be oneness? Yeah, this is a little bit more esoteric. This is a little bit more, how do you reconcile between the feeling of oneness and the apparent diversity, right? Well, I try to use the example of light passing through a prism, right? When light passes through a prism, it suddenly breaks into 7 different frequencies. And of course, that's all we can see. There's actually hundreds more beyond that that we cannot see. Our eyes are actually a very primitive little instrument. You know, like dogs can hear way more than we can and smell more, way more than you. Bees can see light that you and I don't even know exist, right? But you know, like radio. I mean, if you're on a wireless or talking on your phone, that's a light wave that's carrying your voice and my voice and your voice and the people you're having a conversation with. That's a light wave. That's what radio wave is. It's a very high frequency of light. But it's all light, isn't it? It appears diverse. Now, what happens is that within us, because of the conditioning and programming, we develop a sense of a personal self, a sense of an ego that somehow has to defend itself. And we imagine that those people we're looking at are something other than we are. And you get trained by your tribe and you have certain views and you get taught that these views are correct and this guy's views are wrong. And sometimes that can be very strict and fundamentalist. Sometimes people even die for those, create wars or blow up buildings and things for a totally imaginary division. So thinking that we are different will make you feel like it's different. And if you feel like there's a diversity, that we're not one, you will feel threatened. That's where fear comes from. So it all boils down to, as I was saying to Marina, it all boils down to the sense of who I am. Am I really that separate self, or is that just the belief I have been laboring under? And that's what we have to come to. Am I that pure white light, and this particular form that I appear to be is just one of those frequencies of light, and all the rest? Is this just like the infinite rays of light that can take an infinite number of forms? Or are we all just different things somehow happening that are colliding with each other, fighting over scarce resources? In a meditation like I just did, I brought you to a point where it was really clear that there's one. And if I had more time, I could take it even deeper. Now, what happens then is there becomes an inner conflict between what you're experiencing as oneness and your old prevailing belief in many, and a belief that is sustained and believed by billions. And it's in the media. It's all of our systems are based on it. Everything, our political, economic systems, interaction, everything is based on the assumption that separation is true. So what happens is we run into the conflict between what I'm experiencing directly and what I believe about what I'm experiencing. And I have just, over the years, become very, very confident that what I'm experiencing is actually true, and that the belief is false, and that oneness is a reality, and the belief that we are many is the mistake. A costly mistake, for sure, but that belief is the fall. That's the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That is the division of the universe into separate piece parts at war with one another. I hope that answers your question. It's a very great question, and it deserves a really substantial answer. I'm going a little bit faster today because the number of questions are increasing, and I really want to get through them. I hope some of you are already students. I hope you are. You know, take you know, if you even buy a $7 meditation from you, become part of the graduate group. You can go in, and every one of the courses, I have a place where you can ask me questions, and I have videos, and we can get much more lengthy and get involved in this. Because the approach, I can't tell you about oneness, you know, say, even if we sat here for 2 hours, right? You have to be willing to make the journey to start experiencing it and experience that contradiction between what you're experiencing and the interpretation of what you're experiencing. In other words, between the truth and your belief about the truth. We have to be able to confront that. And that's what's very difficult for people. And oftentimes, first, even if we have a great experience, we try to interpret it from another point of view. Then that point of view might get a little bit more spiritual, right? I've had a oneness experience. No, you haven't had a oneness experience. You're oneness, and you experienced yourself, and you were yourself. And then when the sense of a separate self arose again, it got interpreted as, oh, I had a oneness experience. Who's that I? That I is the one that believes itself to be separate. And so it always comes down. The essential belief is that it's not the I that has the belief. The belief is the I. The belief and the believer are one. Let's see. GP, what about music we listen to? Does it matter? Is it okay to aggressive songs and stuff like that? Should I accept those feelings as well? Well, I think as you're on the spiritual path, your tastes are going to change, right? If you're really open to what I'm saying, if you're really open to looking, and I'm not telling anybody to believe what I say. I say just if what I say sounds decent, it sounds viable, it sounds, you know, reasonable, you know, then I'm not spouting nonsense. Just check it out. Just look for yourself. Check this out and confirm your own within your own experience. Because if you see something, once you see something, there's no turning back, right? You don't need somebody in a lab coat with a little checklist telling you, yes, that's true. You know, right? Because there it is. You know, when you're in love, nobody has to tell you. You know, you don't go somewhere to a book to check, am I in love? Right? If you do, you really need some help because you're totally out of touch with everybody. But most of us go, this is love. We know it. The first time we feel it, we know it. Right? It's the same thing. There's just an immediate recognition of truth. Now, I'll tell you, I was a rock and roller when I was young. I liked it loud. I liked it raucous. And I did all sorts of things. Yeah, I did some jazz and blues. But I liked rock and roll, man. It was just, you know, it's great. Right? As I got older, taste changed. I learned classical. I actually studied music, and I became much more versed in the whole thing. But my taste changed over time. And you know, I still listen to some music. There's some meditation music that I can listen to. Others that don't want anything to do with it. I try to write meditation music that is actually worthwhile as music to listen to, but not so distracting that it gets in the way of the meditation. I think. If you're trying to decide whether or not you should or not, you're approaching it from the point of view of the mind. Here's how you do it. You listen to something you like listening to. Watch the effect it has on you, period. If the effect is something that's really uplifting or good, if it's the effect that you want, right, and is really in line with, you know, who you are at that moment, your highest ambitions at that moment, then keep doing it. Now, there's a lot of stuff that sounds very, very rough and on the surface, but it's actually quite brilliant underneath. I mean, I remember hearing rap for the very first time. And a lot of the rap now is just, you know, commercial junk. But, you know, you hear a good rapper, they're smart, they're political, it's poetic. I mean, it's powerful stuff, and yet it's very gritty. It's really in your face. And I still like it. I still like Eminem. I mean, he's great. I mean, it's like he's a poet, right? Not nice, not pretty, you know, but real. But absolutely, absolutely real. So, you know, the packaging, listen for the substance of it. Does it touch your heart? And the more you just become aware of your heart and your heart expands, it'll get more and more and more refined. You know, I don't expect people to, oh, I'm spiritual now. All I can listen to is, Mitten and Ram Dass or something, right? You know, now I'm going to listen to nothing but Mozart and meditation music or harmonium music. Forget. I mean, no. Let your own natural inclinations guide you. That's how you develop the kind of inner trust that really makes a difference. Really brings you to a completely different place because now it's real for you. It's not artificial. It's not being laid on top. You're not somebody. You shouldn't do that. Matter of fact, any teacher that tells you you shouldn't do that, run. Don't walk away from them. Okay, let's see. Make sure. Look up the really files. Just did a video about that. Reality files. Okay. And yes, music has an effect, but it's not the biggest thing in the world. Yeah, it's true. It doesn't have to be. Right? Nothing affects you. Don't choose. Thank you. But I'd rather listen to that helped me a lot. Thank you all very much. Let's see. When you say the system is way smarter than you, this you is the storyteller part of you. Do you mean that? Yes, absolutely. I mean, the real you is the one I tried to bring you to during the one, which is experiencing the entire thing. But our sense of identity has deeply identified with this, with what is nothing more than a self-image that has been clung to as the real you. That image, the creation of that image as part of the energy system, is what I call the storyteller. It's part of what I teach in a reconciliation, a good way to identify it. Because it is just creating stories that are going to work, and it eventually creates a story about who you are and then clings to it. If that story works, especially when you're young, keeps you safe, gets you what you need, that story becomes more increasingly solid, and it doesn't want to contradict that. And that's one of the big resistance. That's also known as the ego, which appears to be in conflict to you. But that's not really you. That's the you you think you are. That's the believer that is also the belief. You are that conscious singularity that is aware of it. Storyteller is not aware of itself. The sense of identity is not aware of itself. You are aware of the movement within consciousness of the story, the sense of identity, and everything that goes along with it. You're seeing it, which is why we can talk about it and you can describe it. But the one seeing it, that's really you. And that is not in the story any more than the screen is in the movie. All right, let's see. Switch over to Facebook. I think I've caught up on YouTube. How are we doing for time? Oh, we're really, really good. So I hope I'm getting to the crux of what you guys are all looking for. Here's one from, let's see, if I read from the bottom up. Cool. Yeah, because I think that's the time. Hey, this is from Pete. Hi, Pete. I know this might be a very, very long question. You can even read it out loud if you'd like. When the original trauma resurfaced, I had no choice but to face it. Very good. Which my system was very incapable of at that time. Yes, I'll just throw things out here as we're going through this, Pete, because I have to comment on that. Yes, absolutely true. That is the fact. Hold on very quick. I plugged in my... Oh, my. Sorry, my computer came unplugged and it just told me it was going to die. You can't really approach this kind of a deep inner work of really coming to terms with who you think you are without some preparation. I mean, this has historically always been the case. You know, this kind of spiritual inquiry didn't happen on YouTube and Google. It happened in monasteries and in ashrams where people devoted their lives to it. Now, we don't have to do that anymore. It doesn't have to be like that. But there still is a very real preparation of the heart and mind and spirit to be able to kind of go into territory that's very uncomfortable. And it also takes a sangha. A group of people are also doing it. And usually it takes an experienced teacher to help you through it, because otherwise you're not really sure what you're experiencing is the right thing or not. So, yes, it's going to be difficult. I mean, that's why I designed Inner Reconciliation, to take you right from that beginning all the way through. And I think Pete's actually in that curriculum. So he says, it was just like witnessing myself dying every single day, every moment. It was like something was bleeding out to death, but I couldn't save it, but see it going, just like everything you ever known is slipping out of your hand like sand grains. And you're trying to catch it, hold everything closer to you, but you can't. It's like you die. Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's exactly what it's like. That's why Christ referred to it as a crucifixion. That's what the whole metaphor of the crucifixion is about. It is the death of the ego, and the ego doesn't want to die. Remember, the ego is nothing but the defense mechanism of the nervous system that has been programmed to defend itself at all costs, okay? So when you challenge it, it does feel like death is coming. It feels like you're going to die. But of course, you're not going to die. You're the one that is witnessing the entire thing. And you're going to find that that which actually dies was never alive in the first place. It was just a thought. Anyway, enough words to explain it. When pain and suffering cross the limits that your own survival instincts, which are made to protect you, are on their knees, surrendering and wanting to disappear, after a year of it, almost everything was lost and gone. But this aware, silent awareness was secretly watching very quietly. Yes, it's very quiet. It, in fact, is stillness itself. That quiet watching entity is what Buddhism refers to as the emptiness. That in Hinduism, it's the self. Right? That is the true self, the real you. In other traditions, in Sufi tradition, that's God, the one I am, which watches everything. Now, after about 2 years of it, the original trauma itself became my home and safe space. It was like it was the only thing I was seeking, disguised as something painful and unbearable. In this world where everything is so focused on positivity, I stay away from everything and everyone I've known in the space of trauma and absolute surrender. I seriously have no desires of the material world left. It's just this pull towards the trauma and the people involved who are not there anymore. Just attachment. Is this attachment to the trauma, or is this the ultimate knowledge itself? Everyone around me perceives this as there's something wrong with me. I have no intention or any agenda anymore, but to stay in this place of surrender to the original trauma. It's like the heart of everything is the trauma itself. It is just prolonged grief disorder and constant grief, or is this really the ultimate? You're very close, Pete. You're very, very close. The fact that you've been willing to be with it for so long. But the self that is looking at it, that silent awareness, was never traumatized. The trauma all happened to the energy system, and it created an identity in order to compensate for it. As you move through all the levels of identity and get closer to that original trauma, that original, the original sin, the original fall, right? The eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, things are going to drop away. They're inevitably are going to drop away because what drops away were the ambitions and aspirations and desires of who you weren't. And what remains is really you. So you've done the surrendering. You're done with that. You don't have to do that. We're not going to fight with the trauma, but you are now going to withdraw all of your energy from it. The trauma is past. The trauma didn't happen to you. And let that sense of I return now to the one that's watching the trauma and remove whatever remains of identification with the trauma and the person the trauma created and bring that all back home. It is completely a creation of the imagination of the energy system itself. You were never traumatized. You have always been that pure, original innocence. And that's the key to this. The surrendering got you here. It got you to the point where it was no longer a struggle, and it just pierced through layers and layers of defensive mechanisms and identities and compensation techniques. You know, you saw through the positivity. You saw through everything that was just simply trying to create another version of a mask for the trauma to wear, and now you're just 100% with the trauma. Perfect. Now, one more step. Take a nice big step back. Can you see that the trauma is something you are looking at? And it is not where you're looking from. See that? This is self-evident when you look. I'm not putting ideas in your head. Just look for yourself. If you're looking at it, it is not you. It is something happening outside of you. It feels very intimate, I know, because it's kind of within the whole system. And now just allow that pure energy of that pure witnessing. Give it permission to start moving into that very same system. And to start removing all of the trauma from every single cell and from every fiber and from every memory and every chromosome on every strand of DNA going as far back into the past as it needs to, as far into the future as it might have gone, completely eradicating every possible trajectory that could arise from here. And let the real you now have complete authority to colonize the same energy that had before felt the necessity to create somebody who wasn't really you in order to protect you. It created a false version. It created basically a decoy. It's done its job. We can retire it with honors and let the true master of the house now actually have access to that same system. So that you, the real you, may begin to express itself fully in life. And therefore know the joy, know the expressiveness, and now aspirations, desires, the things you want to do, will be coming from you. They will be coming right from the mouth of God, right from the heart of infinity. This is really the second half of the journey that few even know about, let alone practice. And that is the awakening, colonizing the energy itself. Seeing it, step one, and then allowing it to move through the system. Just, you know, you can see it as a light, you can see it as water, you can see it as just energy that's actually literally flowing through and removing what's left. Because there's no need for that. The circumstances that created the trauma no longer exist. The trauma is no longer needed. Thank you. You did a great job. You were perfect. You were absolutely what I needed at the time. But I can retire you now with honors. And I can let the real me out to play. To remove that old picture and to replace it with the reality now of who I am. And let that reality be expressed in the most natural and normal human way. To allow the word to be made flesh so that my human life is now a reflection of my divine being. And as that happens, that is what's known as a sage. Sage is the human being who is no longer just a human. It is literally God among us. So the Hindus honor their gurus so highly because they don't see them. It's not somebody who knows the truth. It's truth who has been embodied in a human being. The old identity is gone. This is where you go to. And it's a beautiful place. And it honors the trauma, it honors the experience, it honors everything it did, everything it had to do, and now liberates you from it because it's no longer needed. And you get to be who you really are. And not just be it, but see it expressed in every avenue of your life. You become the king of the realm. So I hope that answers your question, Pete. Beautiful, beautiful question. And I just really praise you for where you've gotten with this to that level of depth. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of patience and a lot of conviction. Clearly, behind it all, you may see, I know you saw it was a big struggle, but behind it, there was an insight, there was a wisdom, there was a knowledge of what is true that has been there, that has been moving the whole thing along, led by grace. That is the beauty of grace. You know, I think I completely forgot to mention the phone number. If anybody does want to call in, we still have like 10 minutes or so. 888-627-6008. Sometimes I just get forgetful. I just get so into what we're doing here. Let's see. Here's some others back over here. Let's see, another one from my favorite handle on DeadCon Spawn, Con Sparrow. Just wonder if we can change the story around and thus give our reality a different manifestation. Since oneness is who you really are, doesn't it mean that the true you can work the whole universe? That's absolutely true. And yes, you can. And whenever you change your story, you're going to end up with a different experience, period. That's the way it is. I mean, that's really what manifestation and law of attraction and metaphysics and all these things do. That's what it is. I mean, even people who teach success and anything that has to do where there's an inner component to the outer experience has to do with that. It's about, hey, we're going to do, we're going to change the story. We're going to see through it and see through the story, abandon the old story, and begin to take on new piece parts. And there's all sorts of techniques to be able to do that, to help the nervous system do hypnotherapy and NLP and EFT and a bunch of different things. And I do a similar thing really in the early stages of inner reconciliation. And that's absolutely true. But there's a flaw in your next sentence, which is, since oneness is who you really are, doesn't it mean that the true you can work the whole universe? When you ask that question, it means that you're picturing oneness as an individual with a will and a desire and an interest in how things go. Does the screen upon which the Netflix movie is appearing, does it care what movie is playing? Does space care if a galaxy blows up? Does it notice? Is it affected? Is it the least bit disturbed? The sense of my desire for me to create a story is based on the assumption that you are a separate individual person and that basically you are separate, more or less. Maybe you're more functional, you've got way better ideas about yourself, you're more personable, you have more intimate relations. All of that may be true, but there's still at this core a belief about you that eventually is going to rob the scene. That sense of separation will inevitably arise again. And it will also, or a certain awakening will take place, and you'll notice that all it ever does is go from one desire to the next. It's never really fully satisfied. It creates a new story, it feels really good for a while, but then something else comes up. And maybe it's so good at manifesting that it can manifest very quickly, so it doesn't notice the feeling of lack that's there. But that's the key. That is the cycle, and it will always be there. So oneness doesn't have an agenda that it's trying to work out. Oneness is just itself. And because it is itself, the universe happens. And the universe is infinite and eternal in scope because the one is infinite in nature, and it takes eternity and infinity to give it expression. So any moment is the fullness of the one, but no one moment can possibly fathom or capture the one any more than one piece of music could capture Mozart or John Coltrane, right? Nor were they limited to it, right? That was it. Mozart got into that piece and was gone forever. And Mozart wasn't even really choosing, I'm going to do this now. It was just coming. It was just flowing. Same. It's especially true when you see really great improvisational players, somebody like a John Coltrane. I mean, it's just flowing. It's just happening. And I recognize it's just happening. Right? And where it come from, who knows? It's just this thing is happening. That's the one expressing itself. It is not a conscious choice kind of thing. That's the agenda of the finite mind, of the sense of self that isn't you. The oneness does not have that. It does not see itself as a person. And if you get, come, go back to that place that I took us right in the beginning, in that meditation, and notice that it is watching everything else, you'll eventually begin to see that the activity of desire and the activity of the person and the activity, all of the activities going on are being seen. So even the person you think you are is in fact just a movement in consciousness happening in front of that which is not happening in consciousness, which is actually the pure consciousness itself. And I've got a few moments here, and I've got somebody on the line here. So looks like the name was Kate. So what is Kate?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. So nice to hear you.
Thank you. I just had a question that maybe you can give me some advice on. It's something I've dealt with for, I guess, over 10 years now. In 06, I watched my apartment burn down. I was 22, and within a month, I was hospitalized with the first episode of mania.
Mm.
And prior to the apartment burning down, I had read, I was reading a lot of things. I was reading The Power of Intention by Wayne Dyer. I read The Celestine Prophecy, and all these things were like coming together, and it was just all like a really awesome time in my life. And then the fire happened, and then I ended up in the hospital. Long story short, 10 years in the system on every psych drug you can ever imagine. It just happened. It seemed to keep happening, and every time I would get to a place where I felt the connected and the where I felt really balanced and really in the right direction, it would always, I guess I would get overwhelmed to the point of, my mind would get overwhelmed. And I wouldn't make sense to my family and friends. I have an amazing support group. And it's like I had things in my mind that I couldn't communicate clearly. And as soon as a doctor got their hands on me, I was just tranquilized. And it's been years since I've had a manic episode or whatever you want to call it. And, I'm not really in the system anymore. I'm happy, healthy, just got married and all of that. But I just get paranoid the longer I go without having, something. When I start to feel connected and I start to feel like I'm in the right place at the right time too much, paranoia sets in and I'm afraid of what's happening. Do you have any advice in that?
Absolutely. You're not afraid, okay? That fear you're feeling is the automatic reaction of your nervous system because it has associated the feeling good and being really on top of it with the bad thing that happened. It's an associate, and it's natural. It's the kind of thing our nervous system does. It's very primitive, and all it wants to do is protect you. So first thing is to see that depersonalize the sense of fear. It's an automatic response. There's nothing you can do about it, right? Step back from it. It can only sustain itself by you giving it more energy. So if you step back and go, my system is reacting. It's made this association totally understandable. I love you. Thank you for wanting to take care of me so much. And I just really honor you. And just start feeding it all the love and appreciation you possibly can. Because when you start fighting it, wanting it to go away, it senses that as a threat and actually digs in more. You become the threat against which it has to respond, and it will get more intense. But if you recognize that all it is that pattern, that it isn't you, it's not a personal flaw, you're not broken. And you even do the little meditation we did at the beginning, where you go back to that place where you're just very quiet, singular, and you're the one watching it. Being the one watching it, it's not you. It's just happening in your field of view. And then you don't need to react to it, and you can see that its reaction in the nervous system isn't you. That's the distance.
Okay.
At that point,
that makes sense.
At that point, it's like, you know what? Thank you. Go ahead. You need to freak out. Go ahead and freak out. And you become totally open and accepting. And you know that's that totally open and accepting. The other word for that is unconditional love. And there's nothing in the universe that resists or defends itself against unconditional love, because there's no need to.
Mm-hmm.
And it will communicate. That will communicate the environment of safety that will then become its norm. It'll start responding to that. Of course it does. Its nature is to respond to the environment. But it thinks that the environment is still dangerous, that it's this thing, bad thing can happen, and when you react to it and resist it and, you know, demean it or something, God, I wish it would go away, it says, see, I'm right. But if you don't do that, remove the conflict, you'll go, oh, look, it's not so bad. All right, it's not so bad. Another thing that I would use for people, if it's a trauma, if it really was as deep a trauma like that as it was for you, clearly, is EFT. And I teach how to use EFT in inner reconciliation as well, because it's a physical way of communicating to the nervous system, you're safe. That's what it does.
What is it?
It's also called meridian tapping.
Tap
various parts of the body. I've got a couple dozen YouTube videos, plus there's dozens of other people. I recommend Kara Look or Brad Yates or myself. They're the ones that I recommend. They're really very good, and on all sorts of different subjects. And it's a way of help. It's not the be all and end all. It's not the only thing, because the establishment of that kind relationship between you and the energy system is the real healing thing, but it's an additional way to communicate, hey, it's okay, it's all right, you're okay. Mm-hmm. The way you'd comfort a little child, you know, that came running up to you and was scared to death. You wouldn't go away, here, take this course, read this, you know, drug them up. I mean, you'd take her, stroke her hair, mm-hmm. it's okay, it's okay, just rock her a little bit, it's all right, I totally understand. How's that? Does that work for you?
That's great, thank you so much, I appreciate it.
Good. My pleasure. Thank you for asking that question. It's really great of you to reach out. Thanks.
Definitely. Thank you. Bye.
Ah, lovely, lovely. I just love to see how simple and beautiful this is, and how healing it is. While it's a deep, deep spiritual inquiry into the very nature of our identity, and frankly, the nature of existence itself, it's also the sweetest and gentlest way of approaching inner healing, but not an attempt to fix the system, as an attempt to truly embrace it, to respond to the divine love. And then we find the real nature of oneness. It's our own nature, and that nature is one, is love. I mean, what else could be one but love? And love is one with everything. I mean, it is everything. So thank you all very, very much for being here. Thank you for listening to me. Thank you for showing up. I see the numbers each week are getting a bit bigger, which is delightful. And the questions continue to be very powerful and deep. And I just really thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And check out gpwalsh.com/thought or gpwalsh.com/IR to learn about inner reconciliation. And that's it for this week. Thank you all. I love you. Namaste.